That was, I think, one of the most important workshops in my life that I've attended, where they specifically asked us to forget about our technology and really identify user needs and understand how we can make those needs a business case. And as part of that, we discovered the problem of cardiac rehab by having a meeting with the American Heart Association. And it became a situation where, rather than being a hammer looking for a nail, we had a nail. Now we were starting to design a better hammer to actually hit it and solve the problem, so to speak.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast, with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Harsh Pasanam, CEO and co-founder of Moving Analytic. We chatted last week over the phone from the comfort of our home, and we're all following the guideline of our local government to shelter in place. We hope you and your family stay safe and healthy. With the COVID-19 pandemic, our life and business have been disrupted. With any challenges that we face, there are also new opportunities. At this moment, we experience firsthand the necessity of technology to accommodate virtual interaction, including in cardiac rehab space. At Moving Analytic, Hart and his team develops a hybrid technology that consists of a phone or mobile app, along with advice from a trained human care manager to guide patients through a systematic rehab plan that can make cardiovascular patients healthier, often following heart surgery or heart attack. We learn from Harsh the importance of human empathy in developing a successful technology. Harsh has a PhD in computer science from USC, but he has always wanted to use his knowledge to help people. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Harsh, and if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And one more thing. Are you a founder of a health technology startup looking for an industry partner or seeking funding from seed to Series A? Apply to the 2020 Rosenman Innovators by Tuesday, April 14. Applications are open on February 18, and details on our website at rosemaninstitute.org. So welcome, Harsh. Thank you for joining me today from Southern California. It's a very interesting time, what we are facing right now in this country and the world. But I'm glad that we have technology that we still can have this conversation. So I thought it would be good, you know, to also hear from you for our listeners. And you started this company, Moving Analytic. And maybe we can start from there. What is Moving Analytic developing, and what market is it serving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you, Christine, for the opportunity. So I'm glad to be part of a new wave of podcast recording remotely, right? So I think it's in tune with our company's philosophy as well. So happy to be the first in that respect. To introduce myself, I'm Harsh Pasanam. I'm the CEO of Moving Analytics. Moving Analytics provides a program called MoveIn, which is a virtual rehab service for patients with heart disease. The problem we're solving is, you know, anytime someone has a heart attack or heart surgery, it's really important that they get access to a rehab program when they leave the hospital. Because if they don't get rehab, their risk of readmission doubles and their five-year life expectancy drops by half. What rehab is it's essentially a service where a trained care manager works with the patient to gradually modify their cardiovascular risk factors by getting them to exercise more, eat better, manage their stress, take their meds, stop smoking, and so on, so that they get healthier and long term they don't have any readmissions as a result of that. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. So right now, if I were the heart failure patient, for example, and I signed up for your service, and then am I assigned to a case manager or is this everything is like an app that I can just, it just tell me it's time for you to go for your walk, it's time for you to take your medication?
Yeah, so that's actually a very insightful question, and I think it produces two things that I like to highlight. So first is, so today, if you qualified, let's say you're a heart failure patient who qualified for rehab, you know, we'll have someone come to you at the clinic visit or at the bedside where we'll say, hey, this is a great program. Would you like to participate in it? Your cardiologist approved by it. You know, it's free for you and so on. And we talk about the benefits. And then if you agree as a patient, we then give you a kit then and there. And that kit has an activity tracker, a weight scale, a blood pressure cuff, some booklets for you to read and learn about heart disease. And then we install an app on your phone. And in some cases, if you don't have a phone, we give you a tablet with the app pre-installed. So all of those pieces work together. And right then and there, we connect you via teleconference with your a human being, as a nurse care manager or a exercise physiologist care manager. And that care manager introduces himself or herself and basically gets to know your history, right? So they get to know, so what is your life like? Who's your family? What's your, what is your weekdays like? What's your weekends like? Do you have pets? Do you have grandkids? Do you go to church? Really try to understand your social aspects of your lifestyle. And then they work with you to create that customized treatment plan as well. And as part of the customized treatment plan, they focus on the risk factors that you want to change and also which are critical, most critical for you to change. And where the care manager really helps is they're the expert. They've done this several hundreds or thousands of times. So you, as a patient, you're getting the benefit of an clinically trained expert to help you manage your conditions. And then they use the technology to basically program a customized program that's for you on your app. And then that app actually engages you on a day-to-day basis as well. And so as the app engages you, you do different tasks. And as you complete those tasks, that data is given back to your care manager. And then the care manager coaches you on a weekly basis through telehealth visits and through text-based coaching. And so there are really two sides to the coin. So the way the technology really helps us with the accountability and giving you an easy to use resource to constantly make progress. Where the care manager really helps is they look at your social determinants of health. They look at your emotional situation, and then they really will focus on personalizing that condition. And we found that both of those pieces are equally important when a patient like you would want to participate, right? So, and that's basically what it is. So pretty much the only time you are in the hospital is the first time when you're discharged, and everything else is done at home. And at the end of it, you graduate. We let you keep the software, the app, and so on, and you can continue to maintain your behaviors and ask questions if you have it. Yeah.
How does a patient graduate? I feel like when you have a heart failure, it's a chronic, and it does. Yeah. I mean, is that the patient have certain milestone, then that you celebrate their milestone and keep on growing with them?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So yeah, our philosophy is cardiac rehab is for life. Typically, our program has a 3-month intensive component where we really focus on driving maximum behavior change. Because what the science shows is that the point of discharge from a hospital is when the patient's most motivated because they had a traumatic event that was almost a life or death situation for them, right? And that's actually a really good point to make behavior change for that patient. And so we use that as the launch point, and then we work with them over 3 months as an intensive piece to really bring about maximum behavior change and get them to a state where they themselves understand their own body and their own emotional and mental well-being and can start self-regulating themselves and self-managing themselves. From that point on, our care managers still work with the patient, but really the patient's, the idea is we're not always going to be there for you. You got to manage your health for your own sake. And so we work with them from month 3 to the end of however long they want to continue for them to have a more maintenance or chronic this self-management of their chronic conditions, basically.
So it's right now, without your technology, what do patients do?
Yeah, so the statistics are astounding. Nationally, only 16% of patients get access to rehab. So that means they even start the first class, right? And then less than half of them complete their rehab. They don't last beyond 10 or 12 sessions.
So low. Why the percentage of people who get this?
Yeah, several reasons. So one would be that a patient who does, so to get rehab today, you have to visit an outpatient facility or an in-hospital facility. And for many patients, you know, who live far away, who live in rural areas, who might be older and have transportation issues, or younger and they have to go to work. And, you know, we live in LA, like to drive anywhere is an hour, and then finding parking is another 3 hours, right? So it takes a long time. All of those logistical factors play a huge role in patients not being able to participate. And in some cases, for, you know, low economic income patients, co-pays are an issue as well. So, you know, you have to pay sometimes $50 for every class, and it's 36 classes. So that's like already $1,800 they have to pay, right? So that's a lot for someone to do rehab. So they just decide not to go, you know, so that's there. So those are some of the many logistical reasons that mm-hmm. they don't go or complete rehab.
So how, compared to what the existing now, the costs, and how is a patient who have the heart failure and wants to use your app, how do they, I mean, do they out of pocket for your program, or is it covered by insurance?
Yeah, so we work with different payer systems to get our program covered as a benefit. And we have a few that we've signed up right now. And when we work with payer systems, our philosophy is like we need to remove all barriers to care. And so we heavily canvass that, at least for the non-Medicare patients, because Medicare, there are some laws where patients have to pay a copay. For the non-Medicare patients, this program has to have zero copays. So it's zero cost to a patient. And the reason we want that is we really want as many patients to pick these programs and without any barriers. And for an insurance company that's covering this as a benefit, they will see the benefits down the line to reduce readmissions and so on. And so that's one of the things that for patients we, in addition to the convenience factor, right, in terms of you do it completely from home, it's also zero cost to you. So really, why are you not doing this? This is really something that can really help you, and it's zero cost to you, right? And we're really gung-ho on that piece as well.
And how do you improve compliance? I mean, you definitely lower a lot of the barrier, but still, they still have to do work.
So high level numbers, where we have a 80% completion rate at for the intensive piece, and most patients continue for their maintenance as well. So what we found to be the compliance reasons has been, I think a lot of it has to do with personalization and having empathy for the patient. And that's where the care manager really plays a critical role, right? So everyone knows that you have to exercise, you know, 5 days a week, but we don't do it, right? Even, forget rehab patients, even healthy patients, right? But putting it in the context of, you know, what do you want your goals to be for the next 6 months to a year, right? And so for some patients, it is, I want to go back to work and feel like a productive member of society. For some patients, like, I have my daughter's wedding in 6 weeks. I want to make it to that, right? So, and really tapping into that deeper motivation, and then setting the day-to-day things that patients have to do in the context of that larger life goal that they have has been super important for us, right? So, so a lot of our first 2 or 3 meetings with the patient has just been, tell me about your life. Like, what do you want to achieve? What is it that you need? What is it that's important to you? It's interesting. It's like some patients, the reason they're not compliant is because they think that, you know, a heart attack is a death sentence, right? So they feel that it's actually I got a heart attack, I'm going to die in 6 months. And just letting them know and understand this is not a death sentence. In fact, mm-hmm. in some cases, you can get even healthier than you were before you got a heart attack.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, but you have to kind of follow a systematic plan to get you there, and we can help you get there. It's like an epiphany for a lot of these patients as well. So I think that's been super key, just working with the psychology of patients to bring that motivation. And it's not as simple as, I think there are things like gamification and so on that can help motivate patients, but really that's not the deepest reason why patients do it. There's a much deeper reason which we have to tap into as well. Yeah.
So in your team, I mean, your background, I assume, is not in psychology. But you mentioned there's a lot of that, understanding what human psychology is. And I'm sure you have a lot of the people in that team that mm-hmm. is a combination of psychologists and computer science and all this yeah. different thing. And is that what you have in your team, or how does that work?
Yeah. So in our team is very multidisciplinary. So it includes nurses, it includes cardiologists, it includes behavioral design and behavioral psychology experts. So what was great for us was that our programs are actually based on evidence-based research and protocols that were developed at Stanford through a clinical trial, randomized clinical trial called MultiFit. This was a trial that started in the late 90s, and then over 20 years, they showed for each of the cardiovascular risk factors that there's an optimal way to generate to treat patients in a way that's holistic and is based on behavioral psychology and so on. And they showed through, I think now, 8 randomized clinical trials that they can show equivalency or superiority to current standard of care in the form of rehab. And so those protocols were built with behavioral psychology in mind. It was built understanding, all the different models of state of change. And we've continued to build on those original protocols by taking into account a lot of studies from Stanford with, Professor BJ Fogg and the habit formation and so on, where we work with experts and consultants to build those habit formation techniques in our day-to-day tasks with our patients, right? So I think what's been rewarding in this company has been that, I get to talk to all these smart people and learn from them as well. And, I think that's great because you do need multiple people to bring success over here as well.
Yeah, it's more fun too because you get to learn things that you don't know.
Exactly, yeah.
Bring
yeah.
other people from different disciplinary.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Ratnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that helps life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownratnick.com.
So your background was in computer science. Mm-hmm. And is your passionate use in that you said yeah. something about empathy to patient is really important. What drove you to start moving analytic? There's so many other things to start, but why this space?
That's a great question. So many other things you could do with your time. Why did you choose this, right? So personally for me, I'm a technologist by nature, right from when I was small kid. Like I used to always break things apart and put it together. I think what was important to me was that, my personal life motto is like, I have to help others with the time. The time we all have on this planet is limited. And so we have to spend it really showing value to society and leaving it better than when we came into this world, right? My skills being technology, I felt is like I should really be putting myself in situations where I can benefit people and make their days easier, happier, healthier because I was there as part of it, right? So I started my PhD originally because I wanted to have a really strong technical foundation to the work that I could do. And over my PhD degree, which I finally completed many years ago now, so I think I've got to build. I just got a lot of case studies on how to actually scientifically build technology, right, and apply it to people's lives. And a lot of my PhD work, although it was a computer science PhD, I don't think I've published in a single computer science journal. It was all in preventative medicine and biomedical engineering journals as well. So. And that was a factor. The reason is I had really talented coworkers and other PhD candidates from other schools whom I was able to work with and really understand what they're doing and apply it to my field as well. So that was a natural launch point where I think towards the end of my degree, I had the choice of either going into academia or going to industry and building products on a day-to-day basis. And my choice was to go to industry because I felt that while I would have been a good scientist and been in academia with publications, really I wanted to put products out that would benefit people's lives, right, and make that useful. So, if not a startup, I would probably have joined a different lab or something to that effect where it was more applied and we were putting products out there. How we specifically got into movement was, from my research, we actually, my PhD advisor and I at that time, Dr. Gaurav Sukhatme, who's now a vice dean at USC, we got an NSF grant to specifically look at commercializing research built from NSF-funded projects, right? And this was actually in San Francisco, where we had the meeting, where Steve Blank and his lean startup model, and we had a workshop on that. And that was, I think, one of the most important workshops in my life that I've attended, where they specifically asked us to forget about our technology and really identify user needs and understand how we can make those needs a business case. And as part of that, we discovered the problem of cardiac rehab by having a meeting with the American Heart Association. And it became a situation where rather than being a hammer looking for a nail, we had a nail. Now we were starting to design a better hammer to actually hit it and solve the problem, so to speak. And so I think it was really one of those things where it became my natural state of being where, I honestly can't imagine doing anything else right now. So it's the ability to help people literally by using our service, we can save millions of lives and also build a really strong dent in the universe in terms of healthcare. It's a perfect start for me as well. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, you also had the opportunity to work for Microsoft, mm-hmm. and that would have been an easier route instead of starting a company.
Oh, yeah. Several alternate realities, and it may be easier, maybe more difficult, but I think I think what I liked about or love about the startup experience is just the direct impact where I can think something today and ship it out tomorrow and it immediately affects patients and hopefully in a positive way, right? And so I think that's been the most rewarding aspect of this adventure that we're a part of.
Yeah, this is a great story of your life. The work that you do at Moving Analytics. How many patients do you have, so far have been using your program?
I think at last count, we were around over 1,500 patients served, over half of which have come in the last 6 months, basically. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of that exponential growth that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And I think is the fact that you have the payers who bought into this program. And can you tell us more, how did that happen? I think everybody always wants to know at the end of the day, how do you get the payers pay for the technology that you developed?
And I think that, about 3 years ago with the current administration when they took over, right? So prior to that, there was this issue of bundled payment models that was there. And the idea was that it's a block payment they give to a patient, give to a hospital for managing patients. That was meant to give us a lot of business because it essentially meant that hospitals had to control costs for these patients, and they only had a fixed budget, and solutions like ours could really help. Unfortunately, that got canceled with the new administration taking over. And that was, I would say, a make or break moment in our business. Like, we had the classic story where we were days away from making payroll, but we had to somehow find a solution. When we looked at our data, right, at customers, we found the places where we were getting the most traction, we were doing better than others, was places, integrated systems like the VA, or places where there was high risk in their contract. And then when we went to interview them, went back and interviewed them, the answer was staring us in the face, but we were not looking at it, which was that, the reason these systems, really it was the payer sides, arms of these institutions that was paying us, and the providers were the ones who were co-managing patients with us. For these payer arms, the reason they were working with us is they saw us as a way to contain or control costs in their members. We had to basically show proof points or evidence that we are actually containing those costs, right? So at that time, we had surrogate costs, so surrogate measures, things like, the functional capacity improves or blood pressure is under control. And science shows that if you maintain those measures, the readmissions will reduce. Over time, what we've been able to do is build a body of evidence showing that we are actually reducing resource utilization and cost of care. And that's really what payers have been looking for, right? So in healthcare, you have three stakeholders. The person who controls the money is the payer. The person who delivers the care is the provider. The person who receives the care is the patient. And really, we had neglected the payer side, the person who controls the money, right? So, and for them, it's all about cost control. And also, it has to be a significant problem for them. So it has to actually make a material difference to their P&L statement when they deploy a new solution. So all of that, that part wasn't hard for us to show, like, because cardiovascular disease is the number one cost for any payer at this point. So I think it boils down to showing the value proposition and definitely focus on getting payment first before taking our technology out there as well.
Congratulations. I think that's it's a difficult challenge, but you kind of manage it, and finding the right business model that works for you, I think, is also hard.
It is.
People don't realize how hard that one is.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the current situation with the COVID-19, how your technology came in so timely that, now everybody is kind of quarantined in their home, and this is something that is available for patients to stay healthy. And do you see an uptick on patient sign up for this program because of that?
Yeah. So the COVID-19, it's been it's not a good thing to say, but I would say it's been timely for business aspects, right? So, the research shows that older adults, in particular, are at high risk of fatalities when they contract the coronavirus, right? It's 3 to 4 times higher than the general population as well. Or maybe it's 5 times higher actually now. But the problem is that these patients still get heart attacks, and they still get heart failure, or they still get admissions to the ED, right? Now, you have, as a hospital system, they have a choice. So one is either they discharge the patients now and risk them getting readmitted 9 months down the line, which is going to burden their system and add costs again, or they provide rehab to their patients and risk them getting coronavirus because they have to get rehab on site. And so what hospitals have opted to do is to actually send patients home after they're discharged, right? And what that means is that most brick and mortar rehab facilities have suspended operations or have shut down completely indefinitely because they just don't have patients to manage. So that has caused them to respond or think about virtual cardiac rehab in a different way, because they're like, now we don't have a choice. We have to still manage these patients, and we have to do it in a way that meets their needs, which is they can't leave their home at this point, right? So, and that's where some hospitals have adopted virtual rehab as their standard of care. And we're actually in some hospitals now where we are the only rehab available because every brick and mortar facility is shut down at this point. And so from our perspective, we are all about increasing capacity because we are having to serve 4 to 5 times more patients than we would have otherwise served. And, you know, the question, I've written an article about this where the question is, you know, is this going to be the new normal? Or, you know, what about the next pandemic or the next virus that's happening? Or what about this condition itself, coronavirus itself, and its long-term effects, you know, the second wave or the third wave that happens? So I think it really is a sea change. It's really exposed a lot of facilities and hospitals to a new way of care delivery. And I'm willing to bet that they're not going to want to go back because this is the new normal at this point. And by the way, they've also been trained how to use new technology. So there's that fear is no longer there of using new technology as well.
I'm glad that you have this as an option for current patients that otherwise they would not have had. Especially with the current situation. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
And it's for sharing your story and also Moving Analytic. Keep up the good work. And it's exciting to have you as our Rosamund Innovators last year.
Yeah, thank you. The Rosamund Innovators program has been really amazing. I know you guys have calls out. So anyone who's listening, please join. It's been a great program to be a part of as well. So definitely glad to be part of the ecosystem and happy, if you know anyone who needs rehab, do reach out to us at movinganalytics.com. All right.
That's great. Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening today. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.